VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 434, recorded on August 8th, 2016. Welcome to the 434th edition of the TD Game Podcast and the 267th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses around... The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, as a rarity, I'll go first because I've been playing a crap ton of games since last week. Just so you know, there's a lot of Pokemon Go news, which I did not include because, I don't know, I'm getting to be like 60 minutes in the O.J. Simpson case. I don't want to talk about Pokemon Go. I will talk about some of the nicer things, like John Boyega says that he found a Pikachu while shooting Episode 8. For those of you who don't know who John Boyega, he's the one who plays Finn in The Force Awakens. So he found a Pikachu while in his... He ditched his Stormtrooper outfit, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. And also, last week we talked about how Niantic shut off was able to cut off the Pokemon finders at the knees. They've started a new patch. They have a new patch for the game. I haven't played it since day two of its launch. I just got bored of it. Now it has something in which it'll tell you what Pokemon are in your area, but it won't tell you where. It'll just vaguely say, oh, there's some Diglets in your area, and there's a Pidgey, and there's a Pikachu, and there's a Charizard. You know, just being very vague about it. Mm-hmm. So, sort of like a teaser. Either of you care about Pokemon Go?
No, I do not care about Pokemon Go.
I only care about it in the degree of its effect on the community, like the industry at large, because people pay attention to that.
Well, speaking of industry at large, you know that Pokemon Go is estimated to have topped $200 million worldwide in its first month.
And you know other companies are paying attention to that.
And that does not include Canada, because Canada doesn't get it. China doesn't get it. So
what are you going to say, Scott? Sorry.
So do you think there's going to be more of these type of games where people are hunting things from other fandoms?
Oh, absolutely. If anything, it's empowering Nintendo to move the route that they were going, because they've been talking about putting a lot more interest into the mobile gaming industry for years.
I think Nintendo is incredibly lazy, though. I mean, look at Pokemon. They really haven't changed that game in the past 20 years, even though they
really didn't have to, though.
I have a friend that would argue with you, Jonah, on that one.
Well, here's the thing, is that they just count on 8 to 10-year-olds getting the newest Pokemon, and the older ones just moving on. And if they want to stay on, fine, but they're not the target audience anymore.
That is true.
You know, it's the same thing with Mario. Well, Mario, though, is a more simple concept. Mario is a platformer, and there's always room for platformers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, either it's Rayman or the game that I just started playing that's really old, and I never got a chance to play it, but I'll discuss that in a little bit. But Pokemon is an RPG, and, you know, I swear, if someone makes a better Pokemon, I'll be on it like Juan and Rice, you know?
I mean, they've tried.
I did play Dungeon... Dragon Hunter, not Dragon Quest, but Dragon Hunter, which was the Enix game before they merged with Square.
Uh-huh.
And that was actually fun. Although I will admit that it was kind of strange breeding these, the most common, and basically they're actually the mascot of Enix. And that was these water droplet thing monsters. They look like water drops.
The little slimes?
Yeah, the slimes, you know. And I'm sort of a little sad that Enix merged with Square, because I really liked that, and I would like to have seen them continue on with that product. I think they were moving forward with it, you know. They were actually evolving. Hey, there's a pun. They were evolving their game. While Pokemon has not evolved into Pokemon Chew or whatever the next level of Pokemon would have been had they... They're like Ash and Pikachu. Pikachu wants to become the next, you know, Raichu, but actually, Pikachu doesn't want to evolve. I think that's why Ash doesn't force him to evolve, because Pikachu doesn't want to evolve to a Raichu.
Yeah.
God, I sound
like... There's like a whole episode about that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. Because I don't watch Pikachu... I don't watch Pokemon, the show, but I have watched enough of it to have some knowledge, because keep in mind, when you're a college student and it's the afternoon, you're going to watch anything.
Yeah.
You don't care. That's why I watched Animaniacs, even though I was in my 20s, because I said, hey, this is something.
Animaniacs is good, so...
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I even watched DuckTales after... Because here's the thing is that, you know, Animaniacs would do its season run, and when that was over, I would switch over to WB, and I would watch... No, it was... sorry. WB was the one who had Animaniacs. Fox was the one that had the Disney Channel, at least in New York. And then I would watch DuckTales. And while it was a little more childish, I found it amusing because they had so many weird things. I mean, the other thing is I really like Tailspin, so...
I think Animaniacs was on Fox because I couldn't get WB.
It was on WB. Because they lived in the WB Tower.
Yeah,
right,
I mean,
know, but I... For me, growing up, the WB came in really, really snowy. And so getting that, and I only watched that to watch two shows, basically, was Voyager and Sailor Moon. So I know I didn't watch Animaniacs.
Channel 5 was Fox in the 90s. Oh, you know, I don't wonder. Yeah, it was Fox. And Channel 11 was WPIX, but they became a CW. And I'm trying to remember if Disney was with Fox in New York. All I know is that I'd watch one, and then I'd watch the other when the season was over. And this was before. Imagine if Netflix was in the 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would have been awesome. But I definitely watched it on Fox. It was, for me, I don't know why it was on Fox, but it just was.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Launchpad McQuack.
But I mean, I loved those old cartoons, too, like... You know,
well, they were new at the time.
Darkwing Duck and...
I didn't watch Darkwing Duck, and everybody looks at me like I murdered somebody.
Yeah, you should have watched it.
I never really got into Darkwing Duck.
I still look up old episodes of Freakazoid on occasion. That show was my favorite.
That was post-Animaniacs. I never really got into Freakazoid. And they also relegated that to Saturday morning, too, which was a death knell for that show. If I remember correctly. I just remember when I was a young, when I was a preteen and teen, I was watching the Smurfs because there was nothing else to do on a Saturday morning except watch the Smurfs.
Well, there was gummy bears and
yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, everything was just waiting for Dungeons and Dragons to come on.
Yeah, there was that too.
Everything was just filler until Dungeons and Dragons came on, and I would not watch any of the stupid Nintendo shows. I don't care if they were good, and a lot of them weren't. As much
you
as
watch
I,
the...
and Captain Lou Albano was kind of a turn off for me. So yeah, I mean, I didn't watch, and I just stuck with NBC. So, oh God, I remember watching Super Friends in the morning.
That was a good one, I think.
Every incarnation of the Super Friends, of which
early
there were like
Super
10
Friends from the '70s. I was watching that, and. For some reason, it was a big deal. Well, it was a big deal when they finally got Darkseid on it.
Yeah.
Because then shit got real. Even though now he's kind of silly, but shit got real when Darkseid came on, man.
Dude, that guy was a big deal all the way up until about Justice League Unlimited, even.
Well, he's always been a big deal. Until the New 52 got their claws on him, and then they just became the Hulk. Just purple and black. Purple and Black Hulk. Me kill Earth, because me, I don't like it. He became just a warlord, when really he should just be never attacking until he's personally attacked, and then he just uses his Omega Beams. Anyways, go ahead.
He's straight up that god that actually Superman can actually fight.
I'm not going to do... I'm going to play the World of Cardboard speech now. You can take it, can't you, big guy? Anyways, so I'm gonna start off the what have you been playing, because I played a lot of stuff, and I'm gonna start off with the game that was released last week, right after the podcast ended, and that was Batman: The Telltale Series. I got a review code for Xbox One Season Pass, so I could avoid what I hear is problems with the PC version. And that's what you get when you have a system that has any sort of configurations. You know, you can't do it for everybody's, but at least an Xbox One is an Xbox One is an Xbox One. I haven't heard if there's any problems with the PS4 version. I doubt there are, because a PS4 is a PS4 is a view. Well, technically, that's going to change. Spoiler for the rest of the podcast. But yeah, we won't be able to call a PS4 as a PS4 anymore, and we won't be able to say an Xbox One. Actually, we can't say it right now, because the Xbox One S was released last week, and GameStop has a really good deal. They're doing $125 trade-ins for even the 500 gigabyte Xbox One, so I'm seriously considering upgrading to the Xbox One S. The only problem I have is that I have to do all this work to get the free Xbox Kinect adapter, which I don't understand. It's just a slot. Why would you do that? Why would you make it a PC Kinect? I don't get it. Mm-hmm. So the music is great, and what's funny is that I learned today that the game has the lowest resolution of any Xbox One game, but who cares? And the music,
I thought you wanted everything to be 4K.
The music is awesome, and it has sort of a Batman Returns, a darker version of the Batman Returns score. You know, mixed with has a lot of brass. It's not the Dark Knight, the Nolan movies music. It's something else. It's Batman-ish, but I'm trying to peg where I heard it from, and it's not. It's not Batman 1989 either. It has that. Maybe it's snippets from Batman the Animated Series. I'm not sure, but the music is great. And they're not lying, because I think like 5/8 of the game you're playing as Bruce Wayne. And the other times you're playing Batman, you actually do detective work. Even though it's just matching, seeing if these two evidences match. It still has a very Batman feel. And then there are two major action sequences. The first one is the generic Heavy Rain style quick time event one, but the second one, which is the last scene, you actually plan what Batman is going to do to each of the guards. There are five guards, and you have to say, okay, this guard I'm going to slam into the pillar, and this guard I'm going to knock into the... I'm going to come from below and knock him into the sculpture, and this guard, you know. So you're making connections. Now, there are not many connections you can make with the guards, but I have a feeling that later in the series it's going to get more and more complex, which is a nice little tease of what's to come. The ending, as a twist, that it might be a twist that I did not see coming, and it has nothing to do with the Batman character. It has everything to do with Bruce Wayne. And no, he was not adopted before you even go there. That would be too much of a twist. That would make Batman fans set fire to the Telltale building.
That would just be pointless.
What?
That would be pointless if it said, oh, adopted. I mean, like, what would be the point?
Well, actually, it doesn't matter, because parents are parents, you know. But anyways, yeah. I won't spoil anything there, but I will say there's some quirks that are annoying me. For instance, there's only one save file, and you can only play on one save file.
Oh, I hate that.
So when you want to play again, you have to play it over your save file.
That's a shame.
The second thing is that you get to pick the accent color of Batman stuff. So I chose the default blue, but since Catwoman is using a purple accent, I wanted to change it to purple on a new playthrough, and it won't allow me to do that. I guess I have to delete my save file in order to even do that. So that's frustrating. I also found that even though I made decisions that I thought would be the logical ones, a lot of people did not make those decisions by a factor of 30 to 70, which was really weird. You have Harvey Dent, and this takes place at the very beginning of Batman's career because, A, Harvey Dent is not Two-Face. He doesn't know who Catwoman is.
Right.
Jim Gordon is just a lieutenant. And the Mayor Hill is there. And one of the things that I wanted, and I said this months ago when we were doing this podcast, is I would love to see a story dealing with Carmine Falcone, and he's the main villain in the first episode.
Cool. So is this coinciding with, like, parts of Batman Year One, or is it an entirely different thing?
I don't think so. I think this is entirely on its own. Now, this is connected to a lot of things. I've been doing a lot of Batman lately. I'm still doing Batman Arkham Origins. I have not yet got to the point in which Joker dies, and that's not a spoiler. That game is a couple of years old. If you haven't heard by then, he dies. And by the way, it's a major plot point in Batman Arkham Knight anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's dead, and you're getting these, you see him as a figment of your imagination. And I tried to reinstall Batman Arkham Knight, and I got a dirty disk error. And that pisses me off in a few ways. One, I'm requesting a replacement. Unfortunately, I told him, listen, I'd rather have a code, because you can't get a dirty disk code. But they say no. And the thing they said was really interesting, that it may not be a dirty disk. It may be my Xbox One. Not that it can't read disks. It can. But there's maybe something wrong with my model, and the disk is not working well with my model, which makes me go, what the fuck? So you're going to send me a disk. How do I know this disk is going to work? And, like I said, just send me a code. You know, I don't know what your problem is. I scanned and sent the disk, the box, the my phone number and all that stuff, saying, no, I'm not a pirate. Because all the pirates have already hacked that game.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They don't care. So, this just taught me a lesson. And here's the irritating thing. Is that I have to install an entire game from the disk, it seems like. 48 gigabytes. So, I'm thinking, you know what? In the future, I'm not going to deal with physical media anymore because of dirty disk codes. And now you're just installing the entire disk onto the drive anyway. It's never going to read from the drive in the first place. So what's the point? So from now on, it's digital codes for me. I mean, I can. It's easy enough because they remember what games you have and you can just install them.
Yeah, I decided that after I got Skyrim for for Steam, and when I installed it, and then even now, it's the solid state. It doesn't have any of the expansions or the patches or any of that stuff. So it's really pointless to even bother with that CD. Just, you know, download it digitally.
And the funny thing is, I got Warhammer 40,000. Total War Warhammer, right? And they just included a code in the King Edition to download the game. And I'm happy that, you know, just to get, it's a Steam code. And I said, that's fine, you know. At some point, I'm going to reinstall it because I saw a nice little how-to-play-it thing, you know, on, I think it was PC Gamer. Because it's so easy to screw up when playing it. Unfortunately, battles are pause fests because you have to hand-hold your troops, unfortunately. Which sucks, you know. And you cannot auto battle the major.
It's supposed
story
to be turn based, though, isn't it? I mean, that's the kind of.
No,
it's
a real time
strategy.
It's Total War. Have you ever played Total War?
No.
TJ, why don't you describe Total War to him?
I thought you said Warhammer.
Total War is Creative Assemblies. Here's the thing. It's grand strategy. Which is sort of a turn-based. It can be turn-based in a Total War game, but the battles are all in real time.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you have to direct.
I like hand-holding my troops anyway, so I don't mind pause fest.
No, but this is more like they're so stupid. You have to make sure they do what you want. Mm-hmm. There has to be some AI involved. You know, I want my archers to remain behind them, not to run forward and get themselves killed, in other words. Now, there's actually a controversy right now about the Beastmen DLC. It's $20. Mm. Wow. That is a hefty chunk of change for DLC. And yeah. Even if it's worth it, $20 is not a good visual for people. It's not a... It's sort of like, yeah, you know, people have already had to swallow the $15 DLC from Call of Duty, but this is $20 DLC. And they really have to justify it. I mean, they were already in trouble with the Chaos Legions, that people had to pay for that, you know?
People were really upset about that, I remember.
And that's, I think it was only $5. You know, it came with my King Edition, right? So I didn't have to worry about that. But other people, yeah. But $20 for the Beastmen DLC. They play very, very differently from everything else, from what I understand, in that they... You don't set them up. You just ambush. You don't have to... They just ambush right there. You don't... You know, there's no... One army here, one army there. Nope, the Beastmen just go, plop, we're on you right now. And part of the reason is they have very low morale. So they're going to flee once they get started. But they're... The initial troops, their jobs... are to hold the line until the big guys come in. So their job is to get killed.
Cannon fodder.
Yeah. And the thing is, the races that they use, the Beastmen are racist towards, so they have no problem sending these slaves in to get whacked.
Yeah.
Just get whacked. In order for me to pay $20 for that DLC, first I have to like the game, and I'm not sure I do. I love the physical objects that come with it, like the horn that you can drink from, and the ring, and the pendant. But the game itself, you know, I would have preferred something a little more intuitive. And here's the thing, is that I'm pretty sure at some point, maybe there'll be an AI patch, and they'll make things a little bit better on that end. Even if you play on easiest, it's so easy to dig yourself a hole that you'll never get out of, and you won't realize it until like 2 hours into gameplay. Say, oh crap, this game's over before it began. So the other games I've been playing, I'm pretty sure both of you would be shocked to find out that I've started playing Spelunky. It was Xbox Games. It was a free Xbox Gold game for 360, and by the way, it's also backwards compatible. So I've started playing Spelunky, and it's a fun little platformer. I find it interesting in the way that it's built. I know it's procedurally generated, but to me it's more like randomly generated. And basically, it's basically a platform roguelike in which you just try to keep going deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And if you die, you die, and that's it. Game over. Here are your stats. Try again. Have either of you... Go ahead.
Yes. It's absurdly hard, and when you're playing with other people, it's ridiculously easy to accidentally sabotage your friends.
Oh, no. Or purposely sabotage. Accidentally them. In quotation marks.
Or just, purposely.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I have... Here, the main thing that I'm trying to deal with is bombs. Because, and also making sure I'm sitting down when I'm putting the woman down, because otherwise I'll just pick her up and throw her into spikes and kill her. And then I'll jump on the spikes myself if it's the first level.
Life is fleeting in Spelunky.
Yeah. So I'm getting used to that. The more I play, I can understand why people love it and have spent hundreds of hours in it. I think it's okay, and I think it's a good time waster, in which it's a good game to play for 20 minutes between stuff. And he's, oh, I gotta go. Okay. I played Spelunky, I'm gonna leave, and I'm gonna come back again.
Mm-hmm.
There's another game that I got that was free, and I think it's free no matter what, and that's Tumblestone. And I don't think if it was $5, I would not have paid for it. It's basically Bubble Bobble. And that's it. You basically shoot three colored stones, and you have to clear the level shooting three colored stones, and it's a puzzle game in that way.
Mm-hmm.
You get experience and all that. It's unremarkable. I can see why it was free, and you know, it's not something I would pay for, but it's not something I think it's a terribly bad game. So, yeah, what else have I been playing? I know I've been playing something else, and I'm trying to remember what it is. Oh, yeah, I reinstalled Brain Challenge, which is now backwards compatible. And that's basically Xbox One version, Gameloft's version, of course, Brain Age, and Big Brain Academy. And I checked my things, last time I played it was in 2008, so I'm starting 8 years later, and, you know, the puzzles are fun, it's as good as Big Brain Academy. I don't really like Brain Age, by the way. I liked Brain Age when I first got it, but Big Brain Academy was much better. And Brain Academy is okay. It's in between. The thing about them is that you're not using a stylus, you're using a controller, so it has to have different brain puzzles. Because, you know, with a stylus and also voice recognizing, you know, it's easier to do other puzzles. I had to figure out in Brain Age that you have to say brew, not blue, because of Japanese accents. Because they don't have an L sound, so you have to say brew. But otherwise, you know, it's an okay game. So, Scott, what have you been playing?
Well, I've completed the first Trials in the Sky Legend of Heroes game, and man, is it underrated? Because this game needs to be.
How's it underrated? I mean, it seems pretty rated to me.
Well, I just mean it doesn't really seem to get any attention, or nobody really talks about it, especially when, because like I constantly see posts about people wanting, you know, stronger female characters, and yet I've played a bunch of games that has strong female characters that nobody ever talks about. It's like these people, they just don't realize these games exist.
You know, the problem is that it's overshadowed by the Tales series and it's overshadowed by Kingdom Hearts. That's its problem.
I guess it's overshadowed by a lot of things. Like
no, but I mean, those two series are very close to what it does. You know, I mean,
I've played Kingdom Hearts, and that game is nothing like Trials. But anyways, it has a really good story, the Trials, and I'm playing the second game now, and for the first time in a long time, I feel angst with a game, so it's like.
Are we dealing with story beats here?
Huh?
Are we dealing with story beats?
There's story, yes.
I mean, the story is making you anxious? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And just, you know, really enjoying it, like I said. And the music's even better in the second game. It's more orchestral, less synthesized. And I don't want to really give away story points, but it's you start out as this as Estelle Bright and Joshua Bright, and there's their adopted brother and sister, and they are part of this bracer guild that goes around trying to help people, and they get little, you know, missions to, you know, do all sorts of things, from, you know, finding somebody's missing cat to escorting somebody through a dangerous territory or something like that, you know. And it quickly starts becoming quite in depth, and things escalate to epic levels, you know. And it's a very big world, and like you were telling me before, this is part 6, and what it appears to be is there's a whole series of games that are set up in little trilogies, and this is the first of a trilogy, and the previous, I guess, games take place in the past, and we're also apparently on the PSP, which I never knew about, and I wish I had. I would have bought these games.
I mean, the third one is coming out in 2017.
Yes.
For Windows, PSP, PlayStation 3, and Vita.
I'll definitely be getting that.
Which is odd, because I would think that would be on PlayStation 4, but it's still only PlayStation 3.
Huh. So, yeah, I don't care,
because we have Windows, yeah.
Exactly, I'm just going to play it on the computer.
So the question is, are they going to do the next trilogy, which actually it was a...
Yeah, I think they are. That's what
there are two games, actually. It was Legend of Heroes 6 that comes in two parts. And then you have the Erebonia arc. Or are they going to bring the earlier games, which is Dragon Slayer and the Gargav trilogy?
I hope so. I would play it. I'd buy it.
I think they're more likely, because Trials in the Sky game that you're playing came out in 2004, 2006, and 2007. So, you know, it's not that much of a deal to upscale those. I mean, the previous ones were from 89 to, 89, 92, 94, and 96, and 99. That might be, you know, they'd have to do a bigger revamp. But with the Erebonia arc...
They do revamp games. I know they've revamped Final Fantasy games. They did that to Part 3 and 2, and they're 3D now, and they upscaled the graphics to a more current age, I guess. And
Oh, I'm sorry. Guess what? The Erebonia arc has been already been released.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was trying to tell you. It's on PlayStation 3.
And Vita, yeah. So you're just patiently waiting for the Windows version.
Yeah, exactly. And I also apparently, I think Tides of Numera came out earlier this month, and I've downloaded that, so I'll be playing that as well.
Wait, is that the one that's...
Zero No Kisuki?
That's the Planescape Torment.
That's the spiritual successor to that, right? Yes. Or is it an actual sequel?
I think it's an actual sequel. It's, I mean,
Legend of Heroes.
It might not have anything to do with the first game, but it's the same place, same world. Yeah. So it's definitely a sequel, but not in the sense of carrying on the previous story. It's the same setting.
Okay.
The Garga trilogy has already been out.
Oh, well, I know it's on PSP, I'm sure.
It's in Windows.
Oh, okay.
But here's the problem. It may only be in Japanese Windows. Actually, if that were true, because Japanese Windows, I think, Japanese is NECPC, isn't it? They call it NECPC, so I think it's on Windows. You just have to look it up. It may not be on Steam, that's why.
Okay.
I could always look it up.
Mm-hmm.
So you're anxiously awaiting the next chapter next year.
Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't finished the second chapter, so I do have time.
Well, you know, it's nice to know that you don't have to... unless they think it's so unprofitable, they're not going to port it, but that's highly unlikely.
They've done the first two. I'm sure they'll finish it at least.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they have two spinoffs, yeah. And those have... Oh, they're fighting games. Never mind.
But it's like I found the story really good because you like I said, you have these two very young kids, and Estelle is, I think, the main character, and she's very immature in the beginning, and then she grows up emotionally anyways as the game continues and you get to the climax, and you know she's a different person, you know.
According to this, that she's very energetic and positive and, you know, very much a Pollyanna. You're saying she becomes more serious and
dark? Yeah, she takes things a little bit more seriously, yes, definitely.
The end? Okay. So, here's a question for you. Do you play with Japanese voice and English dub, or do you play with English dub? I mean, subs, or do you play with an English dub?
It's all English. There's no
really
choice on that.
Oh, okay.
The only voices they do are the battle sounds where they go, you know, hiya or take this, you know, and it's all English, because that was apparently a very big deal for the translators of this game. The second game, they were I had to look up the story again, but the person that translated it was severely depressed, and I think used it as a means of working through that depression translating the game. Mm. So it was, yeah, really huge deal apparently. There's a lot of dialogue.
So you said that you started playing Tides of Numenera, right?
Not yet. I just finished downloading it.
Oh, okay.
Oh, it's out?
Yeah.
It's still in... Oh, I thought it was still in Early Access.
Or is it? Because I have... Well, I don't know. I have to check to see if I have Early Access on that.
I didn't have Early Access, so I think it just came out.
Oh, okay.
Did you support the Kickstarter?
I did the Kickstarter, yeah.
I supported Bard's Tale 4, which gave, and I did on the level that gave me a Tides of Numenera code.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite. I backed Numenera, but I did not back Bard's Tale 4.
Mm. Okay. I'm looking at it here, and it doesn't look like the final build of it is available on Steam yet.
Okay.
It might just be a thing for backers.
Okay.
I'm gonna check the Kickstarter page. Because they should have the updates. They do have a Techland partnership. For those who don't know, Techland is a publisher that's actually it's a developer, and they best known for doing the Dead Island stuff.
Yes.
So they're going to be a publishing partner, which means it's not going to be Deep Silver. It's going to be so that's interesting. Beta access to all our backers. So that's the last update before... That's the second to last update that they have.
Oh, because maybe it's a beta that I'm.
And they're showing it off at they're showing it off at Gamescom. You know, the funny thing is, I'm getting a lot of invites to check out booths at Gamescom, and I'm not registered for Gamescom. And I have to tell these people, guys, I'm not going to Gamescom. I wish I could. It's in Cologne. Actually, beta access was back in June, so it could be. Well, maybe you got an update on the beta. But they did release the console trailer, which is for Xbox One and PlayStation 4. Okay, so that Techland is working on the Xbox One PlayStation 4 port. So that's cool. I wonder if I have a choice at what kind of... this is thrilling. By the way, this is thrilling radio. I wonder if I have... nope, it's only for PC, Mac, or Linux. Okay.
Yeah.
My backing level, that is. So, yeah. They estimated delivery December 2014. Uh-huh. Although, you know, I didn't expect it to come out. As a matter of fact, this is one of those projects I just dumped $20 in, and I thought, you know, I know it's going to come out at some point because it's Brian Fargo and In Exile. So at some point it's going to come out. I'm not going to care when it comes out. I just know it's going to come out anyway, you know. It's nice to have that sort of trust in a developer on Kickstarter.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah. So you're playing a beta version?
I guess it's beta. I thought it was full, but...
Well, here, it might be a late beta.
Yeah, it must be late, because I never signed up for it. I was just checking to see if it was available, and it was. It gave me a code, and I put it in, and...
Wow. It's looking pretty great. It's looking pretty great. I gotta say, though...
Oh, yeah, the art is awesome.
Yeah. I gotta say, though, I'm seeing a lot of that thing that I really fucking hate about a lot of RPGs, and it's where, like, the dialogue choices come up, and it takes up, like, half the screen. I don't want to see them talk big old text bars on my screen. I want to see the animations on the screen.
But it is in early access, so I got an early access version there, Scott.
Okay.
To pre-order it is $45. That's a lot for a... Well, that might be why it's taking so long, is that they're not making a indie game. You know, like, here's the thing. Something like Shadowrun Returns, that's the definition of what I would consider an indie game. You know, it doesn't feel like a full-coded game. Even if it's a large game, it still has that sheen of amateurness, you know? You can feel the creakiness of it. Well, in something... Yeah,
I was wanting, like, a world, like, you know, Pillars.
Even Pillars doesn't quite feel like a store release game. Tides of Numenera feels like a store release game. You know, it feels like a big game. Wasteland 2 did not feel... It's in the middle there, really, Wasteland 2.
Polishes everything. I mean... That is the difference between a blockbuster and a, well, I don't want to say all indies, but certainly the indies that you can feel the difference when it doesn't have that polish.
You know, one of the interesting things is there's a lot of screenshots of Torment, Tides of Numenera, that say to me Spelljammer.
Yep, that's the point. That's exactly the point they're going for.
Yeah. It looks like Spelljammer, and there was only one Spelljammer game that was ever released.
And only one book series, and they never even finished it.
I don't read the AD&D books, so... But yeah, I mean...
That's your loss.
So, have you actually started, or did you just get the code?
I got the code and downloaded it, and then came here.
Did you play it? You haven't played it yet.
No, I haven't played it. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I downloaded it.
No, the thing is that, so next week we'll get Scott's first impressions. Mm-hmm. Yes, so, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I still haven't gotten deep into Tides, what's it called? The Pillars of Eternity yet. I should, but I haven't.
I felt that Pillars was a complete full game. It felt. I don't know. It felt like
an indie game. It just felt like an indie game. Torment feels like a full game.
Well, saying that, it's like Ori and
No, I mean, no, it's just it's not a slam at Tides of Pillars of Eternity. I just mean it feels like an indie game, while Torment does not feel like an indie game. It feels like a game that you would get that feels like it was released in a store. And I don't know. It has nothing to do with quality. It has everything to do with your own personal feeling. I mean, if you feel like Tides of Numenera feels super professional, you know, and I'm not saying it's not professional. I'm just saying sometimes you can see the seams in a game. You know, you can see the seams in between the thing. I don't see it with Tides of Numenera. I do see it a little bit with Pillars of Eternity. I really can see it with Shadowrun Returns. Shadowrun Returns feels like a $20 game that you, what's it called, that an indie developer rushed. And that's one of the things that's the problem I have with Shadowrun Returns, by the way. It feels a little rushed. And I know they were a little rushed, too. Because they were more worried about getting the game out and just getting all the content in there. And it looks like they spent a lot of time with the game editor. So, mm-hmm. You know, you just plug and play. And that's what it feels like. And that's why it's so easy to get expansions, because they just, you know, added to what they already had.
Yeah. I will say this about Tides. There are a lot of animations that look extremely smooth, like character animations and the like. Yeah. I'm looking at some of the environmental animations that they're showing in the trailer, and that's where I see a little bit of the seams. It's not a bad thing, but it does remind me of, like... It reminds me of, are you guys aware of the Out of This World game?
Yeah.
It reminds me of, like, environmental animation in that it's not entirely, like, it feels like a different kind of animation than the characters themselves. Like, the characters themselves feel like three actual 3D rendered models, whereas the environments feel
Here's the thing, though. I think what we're seeing from Obsidian and also in Exile and all that stuff is that they're getting used to a new production cycle, a new way of producing a game, you know, mm-hmm. through a Kickstarter funding, and they're getting better at it, you know. And because Tides of Numenera, I mean, Pillars of Eternity was Obsidian's first jab at Kickstarter, right? And it did really well. It did exceedingly well. And they said... And they took their time to make a good game, but you could tell that this was their first time doing a Kickstarter game. Each successive time, they're getting better. The same thing with Double Fine, by the way. If you play Massive Chalice, it feels complete, unlike Broken Age, which felt like they had to get something out fast because they ran out of money and they had to do Steam Early Access to raise more money. Now, by the way, they're just doing the... Steam Early Access, whether they have the money or not now, you know. I mean, they generated the hype with Torment, not Tides of Numenera. And by the way, if you didn't do the Kickstarter, hey, you can buy it for $45.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, I only had to spend $20, so I got a bonus. I'm not getting a bonus on Psychonauts 2. I doubt anybody else is going to be paying $800 for it.
Mm.
So anyways, Scott, have you been playing anything else?
I think that was it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'd just been pushing through the first game because it was just really enjoyable, and I got that done. So, yeah. Pretty much just that.
Did the game end on a cliffhanger, or did it just end on a beat?
I guess it was a cliffhanger of sort. Well,
an emotional cliffhanger?
Yeah, an emotional cliffhanger is, you know, something... bad happens and you're like, okay, what now? What are they going to do? How are they going to deal with this situation kind of thing? And it was really kind of fucked up and so yeah. And now we're dealing with that aftermath in the second game.
Okay. That's sort of like how Batman, the Telltale game ends, in which you get really like, oh crap. You know,
This is something
really bad happening to Bruce Wayne, not Batman.
It would be like tantamount to Batman saying, okay, Robin, I'm going to let you deal with this shit. I'm going to leave with Catwoman, and you have no idea where I'm going. So bye, see you around. I can't do this right now. You're on your own with Fred. Whatever the fuck his name is. The butler.
Alfred.
Alfred, there we go. I'm leaving you with Alfred, and I'm going off with Catwoman. I'll see you.
Okay.
Have a good life.
That's
tantamount to that kind of like, oh my god, what do you mean?
Okay. Have you ever read the novelization of Nightfall? Nightfall, by the way, for those who don't know, is the one in which Batman got his back broke by Bane and needed to come back. At the end of the novelization, Alfred's gone for good. And Tim asks Bruce, is there a Batman? And is there a Batman anymore? And Bruce says, hell if I know. That's a way to end. That's the way to end a story. So yeah, read the novelization by Dennis O'Neill, who, by the way, has taken over the cinematic universe for DC. And he's also the brains behind, of course, Rebirth. And by the way, Rebirth is going really, really well. I found out what happens in Batman Rebirth number 4, which is why I'm not going to buy it, because it ends on that note that you just mentioned. Not Batman running away with Catwoman, but characters that you really like did something bad. And you didn't want them to do the bad, you know, you didn't want them to do that bad thing, but they did the bad thing, and now everybody has to deal with it. So, yeah. So, TJ, what have you been playing?
I've still been on Rainbow Six Siege.
Okay.
The new characters dropped, and the new map. And
here's the question, have you tried them out?
Yes. Capitao, who is the male attacker with the crossbow, he's interesting. He has the option of changing up a couple bolts on his crossbow. He has a crossbow, and he gets one set of bolts that put up a smoke screen, like mini smoke grenades that you can launch.
Now, here's the thing. We discussed this, I think, 2 weeks ago, and you said that both characters radically changed the gameplay because they denied or gave information.
That's the defensive one, and I'll get there. Capitao's other bolt it's an offensive bolt that burns the oxygen in a certain area where it hits. So in a lot of ways, it's like another character, Smoke, who has a similar sort of option, but you can launch it at distance, and so you can sort of set up. You can sort of snipe. Spots where you think somebody might be camping and pretty much ruin them there. On the defensive,
hold on. Why would it ruin them there? They can't see. They can't
Because if you fire that bolt over their head and it explodes, it'll burn up the oxygen around them and kill them.
Oh, okay.
So it's good for someone who's like a corner camper. It's good for either pinning them down there or smoking them out. Capitao is really interesting. She's the defensive player. She has a silenced pistol that does more damage than any other gun in the game per shot, except for one other character.
Oh, why am I all of a sudden reminded of the zoom pistol in Halo 1 now?
Her pistol is extreme. Like, it's a 1-2 shot body shot at close range.
What's the clip size then?
It's like a 10 shot, but the other thing is that it doesn't kill them. It will down them, which will set them up for her second ability, which is if she interrogates somebody, it gives her entire team an active ping of where the other team, all of the other team members are.
So I'm guessing that players are now starting to go in twos to prevent that from happening.
Absolutely. If Capitao catches one of you on your own and then interrogates you, it's akin to pretty much having camera surveillance on the entire other team for a good 10 to 15 seconds. And it's devastating. She is awesome. I do want to talk about the favela map because it's interesting. What with the Olympics having just started in Rio de Janeiro, I actually kind of question Ubisoft's rhetoric and including a map that's in like the shittiest part of Brazil. It's a favela, and everything is broken. It's dirty. It's grungy and dingy, and everything is breakable. And I don't know. I mean, like, yes, the Olympics are going on, so it's a really good time to maybe hit on Brazil. But like, that is an interesting spot to pick for it. Mm.
That reminds me of the current controversy with Overwatch. It's not one of the news items. For those of you who don't know, there are special loot crates for Rio de Janeiro for Overwatch, and it's created an outcry because you have to pay for those crates. You can't spend in-game currency to get them, and the current loot crates that you already have will not drop the special loot items. So it is quite literally gambling because you don't know what's going to come out of a loot crate, and you're spending money and not in-game currency.
And this isn't the real-life loot crate thing.
No, this is not the Payday 2 loot crate thing. This is something completely new.
I wasn't talking about Payday. I was talking about the real-life loot crate where you can buy a box.
This is an in-game thing where it's and I will say, like, that is kind of crappy, but at the same time, it's all cosmetic.
That's what they say, and that's Blizzard's thing about this. But if you want to get, say, a USA thing, you have to keep buying loot crates just to get it, and you can't do in-game currency for it.
It's kind of garbage. It is kind of garbage in a way that, like, that also probably means that you also get loot crates by leveling up.
But you won't get it unless you pay for it. And the thing, the loot crates that you get for leveling up, the loot crates you already have, won't drop them.
Yeah, that's kind of garbage.
So, yeah, I mean, and related to that is the Quake version of Overwatch, which is called Quake Champions. They haven't decided if they're going to go with a DLC or not. They're still undecided on that.
Yeah.
So this current controversy, you know, and Jim Sterling went off on them. Well, he likes to go off on everybody. But he said that, you know, people seem to forget that Blizzard is a corporation and they want your money. They don't love you. They want your money. And never make that mistake. Like, remember when everybody loved Valve until they didn't love Valve anymore because they found out that Valve wanted your money.
Well, I don't know. I gotta give credit to Blizzard for allowing me to use my old StarCraft CD code to get the digital version of it and be able to download it whenever I want.
Yeah, but they're trying to sell StarCraft 2 to you by doing that. That's like when Valve released Portal Free for everybody because they wanted
to buy. This was way before StarCraft 2 was even announced.
But remember, Blizzard is also responsible for the auction house, which
I also was able to get Warcraft 3, same thing.
But they're also responsible for the auction house, which gimped Diablo 3 and forced people to have to use the auction house, which, by the way, Blizzard got a cut of until they no longer needed it. And then they said, the auction house is an integral part of Diablo 3. There's no way we could remove it. And then they remove it. When it was no longer profitable. So,
I will say this about Overwatch, though. I don't know about I don't know about a lot of Blizzard's other games, but with Overwatch at least, that is probably one of the most transparent things they've ever run. No one, they're not surprising people by doing this stuff. They're not saying at the last second, "Oh, by the way, fuck you if you think you're going to get this out of a."
Well, one of my favorite quotes is from the marketing manager who said, "Well, you know, if it wasn't for the negative comments, this would be a great thing. What's it called? There's no trouble." Yeah, if you remove all the negative comments, then yeah, there's not going to be any trouble, now is there?
Isn't there a big hubbubaloo about their butts or something?
Yes. There was a thing over one of Tracer's victory poses because she stuck her butt out and that was sexualizing her.
I don't care.
Oh, no.
I don't care about that. You know, if gamers want to masturbate to that, that's fine. But remember, there's free porn out there. And that's the thing about a lot of the criticism that leveled at Frank Miller and all that stuff. Is that they're right? These comic book artists think that sex sells in comics, and that's no longer the case, because now kids can just go to watch actual porn. They don't need comics. They don't need video games. They can get real porn with real people in it.
Yeah, on the matter of Overwatch, they've never been like shady about it. They've always been upfront and pretty transparent, so...
Well, yeah, sort of, kind of. Sort of, kind of. Anyways, so you've been playing a lot... let's get back to Rainbow Six Siege here. So, how has there been an immediate... I'm pretty sure there's been an immediate effect with those two characters.
Well, during the first week, which it released, I think, either last week or a little before that, during the first week, it was only out for people who had the season pass. I had the right. season pass, so I was able to play them.
Well, we talked about these two last week, so I'm pretty sure it's been in the past week that it's been out.
Yeah, and...
August 2nd, I would imagine.
And now they are available for everybody, and they are regular fixtures. They're regular fixtures in every team now.
Yeah. So here's the thing. What I'm getting at is you've seen gameplay, a radical gameplay strategy change, huh?
Not quite a radical strategy change, just so much another facet that you have to worry about, and if you don't, then you're a fool.
And you've played as both characters.
I have. Yeah. Capitao the attacker doesn't mess with things as much as the defensive one does, only because the defensive one is so crippling if she gets her ability to work.
Well, couldn't you really call her a defensive? Because if you're exposing everybody else's teammates, that's kind of offensive.
It is. It's a heavily offensive ability for the defensive team.
How many people are tussling the player? Is it like who can get their button down first and it gets to be her?
I haven't seen a lot of arguments over that. I have seen a couple people bring up a hullabaloo and match like, man, you play her every round, give her to me. But not too many people going crazy. Mm-hmm. Just because there are a lot of other character operatives in the game that are already pretty damn good and worthwhile.
You know what I've noticed about Rainbow Six Siege? Started out really, really shaky. I mean, they didn't quite know what to do with the microtransactions and earning and unlocking other characters and all that stuff. But it seems like a lot of time has passed and they finally found their stride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, Say what you want about season passes, but I think it's one of the more worthwhile ones that has ever come out, because otherwise the characters themselves cost about 2,000 of the in-game credit, and it can take a day's worth of gaming to get up the what you need for that. The season pass is about 30-40 bucks, and with that you get 8 characters in each of the maps, straight out of the gate, and you get them a week earlier than everybody else.
Okay, so we're going to move on to game news. First is a rumor, PS4 Neo being unveiled in early September, and this comes to us from GameSpot. After confirming its existence and little else just prior to E3 in June, Sony will officially unveil an upgraded PlayStation 4 event in September. That's according to a new reports by Gameblog and Vice, posted which state the event is scheduled to take place in New York on Wednesday, September 7th. I'm going to have to see if I can get tickets to that. This puts it just before the start of the Tokyo Game Show, which is the next week, on September 15th. No further details regarding the event or what will be announced or shared. If accurate, Sony will likely send out invites to soon with the event just a month away. There have been reports that the system, codenamed Neo... God, you know... I am so far beyond the Matrix, I don't want to hear Neo ever again. Seriously.
Well, Neo is supposed to mean new.
Mr. Anderson.
You don't think it's a reference to Akira and Neo Tokyo?
No.
There you go.
No, it's not any sort of an... by the way, I saw the video game for Akira that was released back in 89.
I don't think it's a reference to Matrix. I think it's just a...
I know it's not, but, you know, I just don't want to hear Neo anymore. Anyway, however, with the announcement of Microsoft's more powerful Xbox, Project Scorpio, and every time I say that, I keep on thinking about that Simpsons episode with Hank Scorpio. You know, Scorpio, he's a... I'm going to put the song in there as well.
It makes me think of Command and Conquer. Okay. And that faction that had the scorpion logo.
I wonder, there has to have been a character in Metal Gear Solid that was named Scorpio.
Probably was.
It's possible Sony's plans were to do so were interrupted. After months of rumors, Sony officially announced that it was working on a more powerful version of the Xbox. Sony was working on a more powerful version of the Xbox One. That's the big shocker. The more powerful version of the PS4 in June. Like Scorpio with the existing Xbox, Neo is intended to quote-unquote sit alongside and complement the standard PS4. All PS4 games will be playable on the existing PS4 and Neo. Sony had said at the time it'll take a quote-unquote smaller but manageable unquote amount of effort for developers to get games working on both versions of the PS4. Since the announcement of Neo and Scorpio, a number of publishers have spoken positively about this type of mid-cycle hardware upgrade, although I know a lot of people are not really pleased because it's sort of like, oh, Jesus, this is going to be like the smartphone industry, you know?
So are they doing what Sega did with the... You could get the Sega CD and attach it to your Sega Genesis?
No, when they say alongside, they mean alongside on the store shelf.
Okay, because I thought they meant alongside in your living room. I'm like, why would you have both?
You know, this sort of tells me that the PlayStation VR is going to be absolute utter crap on the PS4. The sole reason to have the PS4 Neo was to run the VR, the PlayStation VR better. You know, there was no other reason for them to have the Neo because it's only a moderate upgrade. Microsoft is going all in with the Project Scorpio. They're making a monster machine. While Sony is making this evolutionary step that's clearly just intended for people who say, you know, they say, you want PlayStation VR, this is the machine to do it on.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Scott. I mean, not Scott, I mean TJ.
Well,
you're the one buying the damn thing. I mean,
the VR. I'm not buying the Neo yet.
You're buying the VR.
I'm curious as to... Like, why do they keep putting the Neo up against the Scorpio? Why don't they compare it to the Xbox One S?
Because actually, you know, the Xbox One S actually does improve. Aside from getting HDR, it actually runs 9% better than the Xbox One. So what happens is you'll have less 20 frame. You'll notice it on scenes where there might be 20 frames per second. It'll be 30 frames per second. And it does have a processor bump. I don't know if it's as much as the Neo as from the PS4 to the PS4 Neo, but it is a significant upgrade in performance.
See, and that's what I'm not sure I understand about the comparisons of the Neo to the Scorpio. Is that
Scorpio seems like a
straight up Xbox 2.
Well, is the PlayStation 5 coming out anytime soon?
Well, yeah, no. But
well, there you go.
I don't understand.
And well, the thing is that Xbox One is not going to be running Xbox One 2 software. It's going to be running Xbox One software. Granted,
yeah,
there's going to be versions that are forward compatible
against the PS4.
You know, it's all in the space. I mean, if the Scorpio is coming out in like 2 years, when the PlayStation 5 might be coming out, then yeah, you could compare the two. But Microsoft is releasing it next year, and they've already released the specs, and they've already shown off. Now, here's the thing. What they showed at the conference was not a real chipset. It was the proposed chipset, artist rendering. But all the other stuff is there, 6 teraflops and all that stuff, right? And that's basically why Sony became very quiet about the Neo at E3, because they didn't want to get upstaged. Microsoft only announced the Xbox One S, yeah, then they would have talked about the Neo, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't want to be... They didn't... The thing is that these are both half upgrades to the current consoles,
mm-hmm.
Scorpio and the PS4. I mean, the PS4 Neo. So it's sort of like... And, you know, having a beefier machine doesn't guarantee sales, although I will say this. When those comparison videos come out, you know, Microsoft is hoping that people go, holy crap. Because they'll do that. You know those comparison videos are going to come out on YouTube.
Yeah. I think I misunderstand, like, where we are with this. Because the Xbox One S, I assumed, was sort of the half upgrade, whereas the Scorpio was, like, next generation.
It's more like when the PS3 had the PS3 Slim and the Xbox 360 had the Xbox 360 Slim. The only difference with the Xbox One S is just the fact that they made it that you could have 4K output. That's also what the Neo is doing, by the way, is it's adding 4K output, which is necessary for having VR. But Microsoft wants the Scorpio not to run something like the PlayStation VR. They wanted to run the Vive, and they wanted to run the Oculus Rift. That's what they're aiming for with the Xbox, with Project Scorpio. They want the big boy, and I wonder how much the Vive and the Oculus Rift are going to cost when 2017 rolls around.
See, but when you put it that way, why in the heck would you spend money on the Xbox One S and not just wait for the Scorpio?
There's several reasons. One, you don't have one yet. It's going to be a lot less cheap. It's a lot cheaper, also. I'm willing to bet you the Scorpio is going to be $500. And by the time, and it's going to run the same games. See, as the general public, they're not going to say, oh, well, this version of Elder Scrolls 6 is going to have all of this stuff in the boutique version of the Xbox One. Well, it's going to just be a normal version that looks like the PlayStation 4 version in the quote-unquote original Xbox One, you know? I mean, Joe Public isn't going to care. They're going to look at the cheaper system and take it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Us nerds are going to say, ooh, 6 teraflops, yeah, that gets us hard. You know, it's like, it's going to be out, it's going to output in 4K, it's going to have additional content, it's going to have, you know, it's going to be able to handle this and handle that, you know. And the thing is that Microsoft has already sent out the specs to developers. Oh, so did Sony, by the way.
Yeah.
For the Neo. But I would love to see what developers do with 6 teraflops on the Xbox One version of a game. I would love to see what they decide, because I'm pretty sure it'll be sort of like the PC version, maybe a little stripped down. I would love to see what kind of graphic card they have in the Xbox One, the Scorpio. They haven't said that yet.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting.
I'm sensing a huge possibility for buyer's remorse for people that get the Xbox One S.
Not me, if I get it. The only remorse would be that I have to get that stupid adapter for the Kinect. But Microsoft has already thought ahead of that one as well, because now you can do voice commands over your mic instead of through Kinect. But I still prefer my Kinect for that.
Mm-hmm.
Although, actually, now it's Cortana. I have to call out, hey, Cortana. I have to be careful, because my Xbox One just woke up and said, yes, which is something you want. Just kidding. Oh, look at this. It said exactly what I just said. Be careful, because my Xbox One and not to mention that it actually said COZ and not because, just cause. It recognized I was doing slang for because. That's weird. So what happens is it opens up the browser and did a search for whatever I just said. Hey Cortana, unsnap. That's better. Anyways, Scott, you've been awfully silent.
Sorry about that.
No, it's not that you don't have to say sorry. It's more like, you're formulating your thoughts. We get it.
Okay, well, I'm feeling a little, because I feel like there's just too much console stuff, you know. They're doing all this mid-generation stuff, and it feels like they're kind of losing that advantage for over PCs. That you're supposed to not have to upgrade all the time, and now they have this new console that's going to be better for the VR.
What's interesting is that Nintendo is saying that the NX is supposed to be beside the 3DS and the Wii U, if it's not the next it's not what comes after the Wii U. It's more like it's something of its own. Of course, that could be just bullshit, and it's actually, it is the next console after the Wii U, but
it sounds like it's next when you have NX. It sounds like that's what they're saying. This is the next Nintendo, next, NX. I don't know.
You know, the funny thing is, I saw something that's going to be like the NX, and I think I mentioned it a couple of podcasts ago, in which you have that device which goes on either side of your iPhone, so you turn it into a controller with your iPhone in the middle. That sounds like what's going on with the NX.
I don't know. I don't think we've seen anything really concrete about what the NX is going to look like.
Mom, do you realize I'm doing a fucking podcast?
But as far as... I don't think I'll be getting this PlayStation Neo. I mean, I don't even have a PlayStation 4. And this Neo isn't the PlayStation 4.5, is it?
You know, that's the other thing, is that a lot of people haven't bought an Xbox One, and a lot of people haven't bought a PS4, so if they're going to buy their first one, they might say, oh, you know, I'm going to get the Xbox One S, or I'm going to get the Xbox PS4 Neo.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's possibly what I do, because I don't see the point in having both of these consoles, you know?
Well, the thing is that you have trade-ins. Like, if I was to get an Xbox One S, I would trade in my Xbox One for $125.
Yeah.
And get the upgraded version.
Which feels like you're just upgrading your PC, but okay.
Yeah, it's more like I'm letting someone buy an Xbox One launch console for $100 somewhere. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Nintendo NX launch and spec details leak. This is from Trusted Reviews. The Nintendo NX will go into production before the end of 2016 and is also set to feature a built-in camera, at least according to one new report. Nintendo plans to build production trials for the next-generation Nintendo NX console in the third quarter of this year, with mass manufacturing pegged for the fourth quarter of 2016. That's a whole quarter earlier than scheduled, apparently. This is according to a new report from Digitimes, an industry news site that has an admittedly mixed record on leak accuracy. The report reads, over 40% of the initial production will be undertaken by Foxconn Electronics and remaining by Japanese-based Mitsumi Electronics, and Hoisin, Taiwan-based component makers will include a chassis maker Foxconn Technology, NAND flash memory maker Marconi International, CMOS image sensors. Damn.
Yeah, just forget all that. Just continue on. I mean, we don't need to know the individual production.
A whole lot of different companies making a whole lot of different parts of this console.
Yeah, but what is interesting to note is that the NX will definitely feature NVIDIA's ARM architecture Tegra X1 mobile processor. And we'll get back to that, but continue on, Scott.
Back in April, Nintendo confirmed that the new NX console would be released globally in March 2017. 1 month later, the company also revealed that the NX was an entirely new concept that wasn't intended to replace the 3DS or Wii U product lines. Nintendo did admit that it's researching virtual reality, but there's no evidence yet that the NX will feature VR technology. Earlier this week, an article published by MCUK revealed that the Nintendo NX would feature a dream lineup of AAA games, including Pokemon, Mario, and Zelda titles. What a shock! The sources also confirmed that the NX...
Well, wait, you know, it's not such a shock if you have them all together. Because when was the last time Nintendo released Pokemon, Mario, and Zelda at the same time?
Well, we definitely had Mario and Zelda pretty close, I think, on the N64, but yeah...
And the rest is that they got secured third-party game support from, you know, third-party developers, but that happens all the time. It's meaningless. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. The NX is a cell phone.
It's not meaningless for Nintendo, because Nintendo sucks at doing third-party support.
Yeah, but it's a cell phone. I mean, that's what the NX is. It's quite clearly a cell phone, or a facsimile of a cell phone, because Nintendo's finally got into mobile. And they're saying, you know what? Mobile rules. And we are going to get into that market. Mm. And the fact that it contains a camera, is that a shocker? How many cell phones don't have a camera? Even the dumb phones have a camera, you know? So, and that also jibes, by the way, with the quote-unquote cartridges, which are basically SD cards that you're going to plug into the NX. It sounds like they're just making their version of a cell phone. Except the question is, will we be able to make phone calls on it?
Pre-order the new Nintendo Nokia Engage.
I really hope not. I don't need my game console to get phone calls. That's no.
Well, they already had that leak of how it's going to be. The center is going to be a screen, and at either end is going to be a detachable controller. Mm-hmm. That's a lot like what you already have with the Apple. I forgot what it's called, but it's the same thing. It's a controller that attaches either side of your Apple. And just turns it into a game controller. The other thing about VR is that you do have limited VR with Samsung Galaxy 7 if you want. What's it called? They have a special device you put on in front of you, and boom, you have VR. So VR is not out of the question for the NX, especially if it has that little screen. and you're only doing the VR with that little screen, then it's a lot easier to do than with a big TV, right? Or yeah. I don't mean a big TV. I mean with a big what's it called with a sight on both eyes. You know that happens with the Oculus and the Vive. The question is, how much is it going to cost?
I have no idea. We'll have to wait and see. But Nintendo also reportedly secured third-party game support from big-name studios like Sega, Square Enix, Ubisoft, Activision, and Warner Brothers.
Yeah, well, that's no surprise because every single console has always gotten that kind of support. Yeah. I remember when Pippin had the support of Activision, Electronic Arts, and a bunch of other people too. That's almost meaningless. We got support from these people. Yeah, you also had support from them with the Wii U, and what happened to that? I mean, you got Mass Effect 3, and then nothing from EA. And EA said, we're not going to make for the Wii U anymore, because no one buys our stuff for the Wii U. So there's that. But like I said, the Tegra, yeah, it's a cell phone. The question is, how powerful a cell phone and how inexpensive are the components going to be? Because Nintendo's not going to... Cell phones, they're not going to release a $600 what's called mobile platform. There's no way.
Yeah.
I don't think they'll ever go $600 because they need to compete with PlayStation and Xbox, and they need to have a low... I know they don't view themselves as...
Well, they have to compete with... they have to compete with the Vita and their own 3DS. So I'm willing to bet you it'll be like $250 to $300.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I think around that price.
And, you know, it is kind of appealing to me to have a mobile console, which it's more of a mobile console than... Because, remember, the other part of this is that it can stick into your TV and you can play it, play your game through to your TV, right? So it's that kind of... It can be a home console, too. And... It's appealing to me because it's not going to have stuff that is going to be on the Xbox One and the PlayStation 4, obviously. You know, you're not going to get Zelda, you're not going to get Pokemon, and you're not going to get Mario on the other consoles. You're going to get reasonable facsimiles, but you're not going to actually get them. The question is, will you get Icarus? Kid Icarus? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I doubt it.
They already tried Kid Icarus, it failed. TJ.
For the next one?
No, for this.
Oh. I was going to guess 350, just because I feel like... You don't think so?
No, that would be deadly. For what they're offering, no. This is going to be...
If you think about the fact that the Scorpio is going to be $500, and the PS Neo, we don't even know what that's going to cost yet. It seems like it's in line.
They can't be more expensive than the actual 3DS. That just wouldn't make any sense.
And the thing is, I don't think this is going to be a set top. This is not going. I'm pretty sure there's not going to be a set top console. I think they're going to go $250 to $300 as a very expensive mobile platform. Like I said, they already said it's going to be something different, and it seems like it's going to be a hybrid. You know, with the SD chips and all that stuff, and the way they have the way it's described that the sides of this thing are going to come off so you can have a controller on each hand, yeah, it just screams to me, mobile.
Yeah. And,
go ahead.
But I would argue at that point that then it's doing things that other systems can't do. You can't attach a 3DS to a TV, and you can't take an Xbox One with you.
That's true.
And if that's the case, if it performs... With some serious integrity on both areas, then that's something different, and that's something noteworthy.
But you have to understand the Nintendo fan base. They're not going to pay $350. They're not like us Xbox One and PlayStation 4 people. If they see a high price, they're not going to go, ugh, fine, we'll pay it. No, Nintendo fans are going to say, we're going to wait. As a matter of fact, that's what they've been doing with the Wii U. They're saying, we're going to wait, because we don't like the Wii U. We want whatever's next. You know? I mean, Nintendo fans, you know, the core Nintendo fans are not stupid. They know they really don't like the Wii U. I mean, there are some... Yeah. Scott likes the Wii, but the thing is that they haven't been buying the Wii U en masse like they did the Wii, Well, unfortunately, they didn't do it with the Nintendo 64 as much as Nintendo would have liked.
Yeah, I haven't played Wii U in a long time now, so it's been mostly PC gaming.
Gathering dust on your...
Yeah, exactly.
Well, then that'll mostly... I've said it before several times, and I'll say it again. It'll come down to what hardware is available that you can do on the NX that you can't do elsewhere at the time of release.
Okay. So we're going to move on to the next item, which is definitely something you probably want to talk about, TJ.
Okay. Before you play Dishonored 2, you should finish the first game's DLC, says Arkane Studios, from GamesRadar. Dishonored 2 creative director Harvey Smith suggests players play both DLC packs for Dishonored before the sequel hits in November. Quote, "I'm not just saying this because I want people to buy our game, but I really hope people play the original game's DLC," end quote. Harvey told me at QuakeCon.
Okay, I didn't mean being the... not TJ.
Yeah. Dunwall City Trials are fun challenge modes, but the Knife of Dunwall and the Bridgemoor Witches are really good chapter pieces after we had really figured out the game, so they're better in a way. And they were also a step forward toward where we went with Dishonored 2. There are more women and interesting roles than the narrow roles they have before. We really understood our world, and it's a bridge, in a way, to the new content. The DLC campaign follows Dowd, who was last seen being spared or killed by Corvo for assassinating the Empress. Aside from filling in the story from Dowd's perspective and introducing characters like Delilah, who looks to be a central villain in Dishonored 2, Smith says the expansions were where the Arkane Studios first experimented with a voiced main character. Both Corvo and Emily have voiced lines in Dishonored 2, and tried out some of the tweaked powers that have further evolved for Corvo's campaign. Quote, "I really hope people that are just into the action part, I hope they play as, like, an appetizer. I hope they play Knife of Dunwall and Bridgemoor Witches," Smith said. He also helpfully pointed out that they're both included with Dishonored Definitive Edition.
Yeah, he very helpfully pointed that out. Isn't that nice of him? So anyways, you played both DLC, I assume.
I have not, but I have the Definitive Edition, and I'm getting there. Okay. I've been replaying Dishonored, and I've been having a good time with it. And... I'm aware of what goes on in them, but I haven't, like, played through that. I haven't, like, opened up, like, the end parts of what happens and what their implications are.
Alright. So, yeah, so it seems... the only problem I have is that there's going to be a lot of people who didn't play Dishonored at all, and they're going to buy Dishonored 2, and I hope they're not lost in because that's the problem Halo has right now. If you just get into Halo at Halo 4... it's like, okay, what the hell is the Didacta, and what the hell is Cortana, and what the hell is all this stuff going on, and why does this matter, and why does that matter, etc., etc. So I hope at least in Dishonored 2 they will bring new players up to speed.
I have faith in Arkane. Dishonored 1 starts off after, like, a whole bunch of backstory, and they just don't even, like, they weave it in pretty well. Like, they give you the cliff notes at the very beginning, but they also sort of weave it into the environment and tell you what's going on and get you up to speed in a pretty satisfying and not at all jarring sequence.
Well, we have seen the opening to Dishonored 2 already.
Uh-huh.
You know, what happens is you're there, both Corvo and Emily? It's Emily, right? Or is it?
Yes.
Okay, both Emily, and they're there. And they shared expository dialogue about, because it's the anniversary of the Empress's death, and how she's going to have to take her place soon, and, you know, that's enough of who these two people are in relation to each other at the very most basic level. But, yeah, so you haven't played the DLC, but does that mean Dowd is going to be involved? In Dishonored 2, or...
No, because at the end of Dishonored 1, well...
No, Dowd is the main character in the DLC, whether you kill him or not, because the mysterious stranger, whatever his face is, he resurrects him if he dies. And he gives him Corvo's power for whatever reason. I always got a John Delancey Q vibe from that guy, by the way. Haven't you?
I don't know. Now you got me thinking.
Well, while you're thinking, how about you, Scott?
Well, I haven't played that part of the game. I only played, like, the very beginning, so I haven't seen this character yet. But I think it's entirely possible, as TJ was saying, to summarize things and get people up to speed, even if it's been, you know, several games worth. I've always been able to do that myself when I was playing a game, because there have been several times where I accidentally read the middle, I started at the middle or near the end of a story and didn't realize that I would actually bought like the last book or something, and so I'd have to go back and read up to it, but I would still understand what was going on anyways. So it was kind of crazy like that, I guess.
I never actually finished this saga. Does it end with a cliffhanger, TJ?
It ends depending on how you play the game.
But either way, does it end with a cliffhanger or does it just end?
One of the low chaos ending is less cliffy than the high chaos ending. The high chaos ending is literally people drinking in a bar fade to black.
That's exciting.
When you say high chaos, is that because
when you kill everybody and you just leave death all over your place? Okay. Low chaos is when you're stealthy and you don't kill anybody, not even your targets.
This game is really hard in that aspect. I was having a lot of trouble staying stealthy and not killing people. It just, you get caught like so easily. It's ridiculous.
With me, it's I didn't have any trouble staying hidden. The problem was the game didn't know when I wanted to save somebody or not. There's a character that you have to hide, a girl's father, and no matter how well I hit him, the game seemed to think I killed him, or he got killed somehow. And I'd get hell from the girl, the daughter. So I said, screw it, you know what, I'm just going to play this over and I'm just going to murder everybody. Leave no witnesses. Everybody has original sin, so they have to die anyway.
Jeez.
So, well, it was one way to play, and it was actually very liberating, just murdering everybody, not worrying about having to use stealth, but not having to worry about accidentally killing somebody. Oh, you're just an innocent prostitute working in this brothel. Well, sorry, you saw it, so you have to die now. And I'll do it in the grisly death
guard.
What?
And the poor innocent guards just doing their
duty. And the guards and the patrons who are just there to get some nookie. Everybody. The rats are having a feast tonight. And as you know in Dishonored... that's one thing. The rats are not in Dishonored 2 because it takes place in a new city.
Mm-hmm. So. Bugs.
So anyways, I'm pretty sure you're getting amped up for Dishonored 2 there, TJ.
Yes. I will try to make it further through the game and into the DLC and see if I can't talk about that next week.
Have you looked at my E3 video again?
What's that?
Have you looked at my E3 video again?
God, that was so awesome. I would love to get my hands on any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But secondly, No Man's Sky releases tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing.
And I am preloading it now, so expect some thoughts on that next week.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Shaq News and a lot of other people are warning that the hype train may hurt No Man's Sky.
Well, we'll see.
So I'm not getting No Man's Sky because it's just a survival game, and I'm done with survival games for a long while. I mean, I always die in them anyway. Like Long Dark, I can't find food, you know, so even if I find that cabin where I can burn wood, I'll starve to death anyway, and I'll freeze to death looking to find find food. Maybe I should fashion myself a fishing pole because I think I saw a lake nearby. Have either of you played Don't Starve?
Yes, I have.
Yes.
Okay, because I'm looking at that because they have a bundle on Xbox Live for both of them, for Don't Starve and the expansion. So I might get that at some point. I assume you guys enjoyed it, or?
It was quirky and amusing.
Yeah, quirky and amusing and really just kind of stressful. You're like I said, you're on a knife's edge the entire time. and it's really just a matter of time until you screw up and you're dead, you know. And I guess I don't really like games like that. I want to build something. And
yeah, you want Starview Valley, we know.
Yeah, Starview Valley, Minecraft, yeah.
You know, have either of you ever played the card game Gloom?
No.
Okay, it sort of looks like Gloom. The graphics. Anyways, we had listener feedback for the previous episode, 432, but it was a long, Donovan sent a long reader message, and I cut it in half, and basically says, excuse me.
Ooh.
I like using keyboards for racing games that have simplified acceleration, braking, reversing, and turning such... I like using keyboards for racing games that have simplified acceleration, braking, reversing, and turning, such as Trackmania, four keys for all. But fighters and stuff are difficult for them via keyboards. Mice allow for more angular granularity than controllers because of the area of movement across the mousepad surface when using an adequate sensitivity, and mice can be pulled around 1 kilohertz or more versus controllers being pulled around 250 hertz, as far as I know. And the rest of it, he has a long article about how he's able to play, action games like Batman Arkham Asylum, and he has links and all that stuff. So if you want to read the full long letter, just go to gamingpodcast.net and go to episode 432, and you'll be able to read it all there. It's a very long, letter, and I'm not going to read all of it. So if you want to read it, and also it has links, and you can click on the links there. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the history news and our gaming history articles. And I'm not going to do that. Your reaction to playing action games with a mouse instead of a controller on PC.
I definitely feel that the mouse is quicker and easier, and I think exactly what he was talking about, the angular granularity. Basically, moving the camera with the joystick is very slow and cumbersome,
yeah.
Whereas the mouse is very quick and agile.
Yeah.
It depends on if I'm playing online or not with other people.
Let me say, he does go on to say about mouse sensitivity. If it's set too high above 800 CPI, it becomes an issue because quantization occurs at too low of a CPI. So he recommends it being equipped with a 3360 sensor. He goes into the mechanics of how optical mice read and stuff like that.
I mean, I like controllers for platforming games, but for first-person games, it's definitely mouse and keyboard.
Yeah. And I would even say, it's the difference between playing a game like Gears of War, where I'm going to play against other people and I really need to focus on where I'm aiming, and playing a game like Just Cause, where I'm just having a crap ton of fun destroying everything around me. I don't really care about sensitivity when it comes to Just Cause.
Yeah, I mean, I can do a platformer with a keyboard and a mouse. Actually, just a keyboard, not even a mouse. But like sports games and Batman Arkham games, you know, one of the funny things, though, is that in Batman Arkham Asylum, if you're using keyboard and mouse, instead of saying press the middle thumbstick, it'll say tilt your mouse when the Joker shoots you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fishing mailed, what's it called, scene. Tilt your mouse if you want to dodge the bullet. Which, of course, is silly, but that's the entire point. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy feedback, leave us comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast, the forum, or send us your comments at fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs on Twitter.
And I am at AlphaShard at, Twitter.
All right. So, any last thoughts before we hang up? Or go away, or whatever it is we do when the podcast ends?
Nope.
Okay. Really, you guys are so boring.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Boring.
What are we talking about next week?
Boring. Well, okay. TJ will be talking about No Man's Sky next week.
Oh, again, I forgot to mention there is apparently a Dragon Quest X
yep.
for Nintendo. That's coming out.
Also, I want to hear about Tides of Numenera.
I'll definitely play that and let you know.
Yeah, I'm just a $20 backer. I don't get a early access beta. Although, actually, you know, I should check on. Speaking of early access betas, I really should check on Master of Orion, and see how that's coming along, because they added a lot of stuff like 2 months ago, which I didn't get to check, and I'm gonna see if they added something new there as well.
All right.
Here's a question. Did you get the link I sent regarding the new the global strategy game, TJ?
Yes.
Because they added a new they announced a new expansion for that new race. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is that I'm wondering if either of you are interested in Master of Orion.
No.
Really? I would think you would be, actually, Scott. It is a Civ sort of game. Did you ever play
it? I haven't looked at it long enough to make a decision on that.
Have you ever played Master of Orion, TJ? I mean, Scott. Because Scott is
okay. I've seen screenshots, but I don't know if that looks... I just don't know if it's for me or not.
What you might want to do is go to Good Old Games and pick up Master of Orion 2 for like $4 and check it out. It's somewhat primitive, but not really. I will say this though, it's hard as hell. At least for me. I mean, well, here's the thing: you're playing on Emperor in Civ 5. Well, I'm still playing on Prince, so I have to be careful about what I say is too hard for me, because what's too hard for me may be easy for you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
But it's basically Civ with planets and upgraded. And actually, you know, it has tactical combat, but usually I just let them fight on their own. You know, because it's fun to watch. Because the computer is capable enough fighter to handle battles without me, which is not like Total War Warhammer. Anyways, we will see you next week. And like TJ bragged, he's going to have the lowdown on No Man's Sky.
Yep.
Anyways, see you next week.
Later, everyone.
Happy gaming, everyone.